Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Friday Sprinkles, where we go through the email that we've received from you. And a couple of extraordinary things have happened. Before we come on to that, I just wanted to say thank you for the email. It is unbelievable, the email we've been getting.
The amount of joy that we feel when we get it is indescribable.
But it's a bit of an embarrassment of riches. This is the problem. There's so much. And what we don't want to do is spam your podcast feed with an hour and a half long episode on a Friday, having given you a longish episode earlier in the week. So I want to try and keep these as short as possible.
So are you sort of setting people up in the kindest way for some level of rejection if they took the time to write us an email and we're not going to have the time?
It's not even that we're just doing the good ones.
No, it's
all good ones.
Because it's only good ones. And so then it's sort of about covering a breadth of different topics. And then we've mostly gone with who got to us first, because it seemed fairest.
There was some from last week that I thought, oh, that'd be good to do next week. But then the events of the show move on.
It's a whole thing.
So can I just start with two really exciting things?
Yeah.
Yesterday, the most incredible thing happened.
Oh,
out of the blue.
Oh my God.
We suspect the hand of last week's guest, Deborah Frances White, may have been pulling the strings
here. Our fairy godmother.
But Lucy Prebble, who is at the top table in
I think people who are listening to this, they don't need to be told who Lucy Prebble is.
But maybe actually you know her in a Succession context, but you don't know just what a phenomenal playwright and acclaimed playwright she is. And she was also behind I Hate Susie, which we loved.
I think that was Hirsch. I think she just straight out wrote that.
That's why I said she was behind it.
Do you think the phrase "she's behind that" suggests a loose involvement versus the show itself?
Oh, I think it means it's your baby. You're the person.
I hear that differently.
Then I apologize to Lucy Prebble, because yesterday she tweeted about our podcast.
It was such a moment.
And I couldn't believe it. Just as it came out of nowhere, I checked my notifications. There it was. It says, "The Succession podcast is excellent."
And if she did that only to be kind, I'll still fucking take it. It was so glorious.
Our heads exploded. So that's incredibly exciting, because we've been saying, does anybody know anyone involved in Succession? And then that happens. And then we receive this email. This comes from Tim Wilson, who says, "Hello, Jeff and Sarah. I recently discovered your podcast. For what it's worth, I've been Brian Cox's stand-in since the pilot was shot in November, December 2016.
No!
And believe it or not, I played Connor in a pre-production rehearsal with director Adam McKay of Logan's Birthday Party.
No!
Alan Ruck wasn't quite signed, sealed and delivered yet, so I had the extreme pleasure and admitted twinges of anxiety of working with all of the other principal actors blocking the sequence. We did that on Election Day 2016. Oh. I wore my I voted sticker." Yep. He says, "Anyway, I'll be asking around about Logan's cardigans. I have it in with someone from the costume department. Also, I'll have you know, Logan's chair on his private plane is the most comfortable seat I have ever planted my tush on." He says, "I'm looking forward to listening to your podcast. I wouldn't be averse to chatting a bit with you, although I wouldn't want to violate the NDA I signed."
let's get him to violate it. Wait, a couple
of things.
We'll
carry on being Brian Cox's standard.
What was his name again?
Tim Wilson.
He's American, right?
Yes, yeah, he's based in New York.
Well, he used the word tush. I mean, I knew what was going on when he said tush.
Do you want to see the photo that he sent?
Yes, Tim Wilson. I love your punim. I think I'm talking his language to him. How absolutely thrilling. I think we have to give him a nickname. We don't officially have a slime puppy yet.
Then he can be slime puppy.
You're
going to
be slime puppy. And what a joyous and close connection.
It's unbelievable. The Lucy Prebble thing was insane.
Yes.
And then that, out of the blue.
Brian Cox's stand-in.
It's too good.
Fantastic. I think we should get him on and see if we can get some good stuff out of him.
That would be wonderful.
I want him to violate that NDA in my face. All right, slime puppy, thank you so much for being in touch. Hope to be in touch again soon. Our next email is from Laura Banks. Henceforth, she will be referred to as a sweaty corpse. Hi, I'm an AASECT certified sexuality educator. In my opinion, Roman is just very kinky, and his kinks revolve a lot around power and control, as most kinks do. When his kinks aren't being fulfilled, he has trouble getting aroused. Most sexuality professionals worth their salt will say that some people are just kinky, and there isn't necessarily any quote-unquote root. That's interesting. He is on the natural spectrum of human sexuality, just sensationalized for entertainment purposes.
But presumably, like, everything we do or think has a root in something, right?
Okay, you're disagreeing with the certified educator.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that, no, but I don't mean that as a, you know, go fuck yourself. I'm just saying your point is everything has some kind of root. Maybe what a sweaty corpse is saying is that sort of fixating on the root is a useless, some kind of useless exercise.
Yeah.
And what you're really trying to do is just figure out how to incorporate your kink into a healthy emotional relationship.
Yeah. I don't know why I felt the need to weigh in on that. And then I don't think either you or I really have a kink.
Do I have a kink? Do you have a kink?
I think I'm very Tom-like in that respect. I just want affection from my wife. Is that a kink? You certainly aren't afflicted with the same kink.
You're not as affectionate as you think you are, maybe. Sometimes I do wonder if you're exceptionally focused on your own ball sack. You don't have to answer that. You don't have to answer it.
I think it's a recent development. It's nice at my time of life to think.
We could do the balls instead of the shaft. I think as well, but then I just wonder if it's like,
I don't know if that counts as a kink,
though. I don't know that it counts as a kink. Also, what I wonder is it like, is it actually, because of course our relationship is the most intimate that I've had, did every other man that I ever encounter sexually want the same amount of scrotal play, but they just, there wasn't enough intimacy in the relationship to ask for it? Should we move on?
Yeah, but I just want to point out here, because I think you made that sound weird. Oh, not weird, because no judgment. I think, like,
there's nothing weird about it.
No, but I just want to point out, like, you're not sort of going down there with elastic bands or gaffer tape or anything
No.
I just wanted that out there.
No.
Or electrodes.
No. There's no, like, you're not someone who has any lick of mixed pain with my pleasure.
No.
But neither do I.
I wish I had a kink. I think it's so vanilla to not have one.
No, I don't wish I had a kink. Sorry.
I have no judgment about any kind of kinks. I just think, like, almost everything human beings do is either you can view as being entirely normal or really quite
all
weird.
All I'm saying is,
is
if somehow you were able to be privy to the information when our son is 40 himself, that he needs to have a woman step on his little scrotum with a pointy stiletto heel, I fucked up as a parent a little
bit. Can I just say as well, just in case anybody's reading anything into that, that the focus on my scrotal area is nothing to do with, there's no heels involved either, stilettos.
No, we made that point about you.
Okay.
I'm just saying, if you're just, like, there's no judgment. It's like, yeah, there's no judgment. But sometimes when we talk about this stuff, it's like, think about your own child as an adult carrying that kink. You'd be like, that might be on my shoulders. Yeah. maybe I fucked up a little.
But I'm projecting that because I don't have that kink. Maybe.
Okay, listen. The role you like to play is super neutral.
Yes.
The role I like to play is judgy, bitch. And I'm comfortable taking whatever flack I'll get on that because it's more comfortable sometimes coming from a woman, blah, blah.
Right.
So anyway, if you have a kink,
Yeah.
And I've offended you. Mm. And you feel like, no, this isn't rooted in some shit. This isn't rooted in any way in which. And like, I'm broken. I'm not perfect. I'm broken. You're not perfect. You're broken. I'm just saying in our instances, it doesn't come out sexually. I don't think. Mm, mm-hmm. So if you feel that you're broken does manifest in a sexual kink and I'm being unreasonable, tell me about it. Convince me. So our next email is from Julia B. Henceforth, she will be referred to as Professor Can't Fuck. Professor Can't Fuck, thank you so much for being in touch. Hi, guys. I heard you guys mention that you wanted to take on Roman sexuality. My personal take, and I'm not a psychologist, but my mother is, and we talk about this a little.
Same as your mom.
Yes, but my mom would not talk to me about someone's sexual. Am I sounding too judgmental again? My personal take is that he internalized trauma, shame, and abuse. Remember him talking about being locked in a cage? Of course. As pleasure. Shame is often a component of sexual pleasure. It is not odd to enjoy good-natured teasing from someone you're interested in. Likewise, when we are developing, we learn that displaying your sexuality in front of others is wrong, and therefore to some extent shameful. Huh. So the two are always linked in our minds, even if we are obviously not all like Roman. But in someone who has not worked through their trauma and his obvious father issues, it would come out as an incapacity to connect to someone else unless it was through shame. Brilliant. In my view, when he asks his young desirable partner to pretend she's dead, what he actually wants is for her to humiliate him and to some extent deny affection, mimicking his childhood emotional deprivation.
You're so into this.
But I also feel moved.
No, I know.
I feel moved and I feel sad because I'm picturing the little boy. Mm. The thing about Jerry and Roman is that she plays both parts, the part of the mother that rejects and shames him, but that of a mentor figure that is to some extent supportive and can guide him through his problems. This is fucking brilliant. I think there is some degree of real affection between them. Yes. Though, of course, every character in the show has deep emotional issues and can't really connect to anyone. I think it's a really interesting relationship because we almost never get to see an older woman getting to be a symbol of desire. And I really like how the sex is a character detail, not just this freaky and therefore funny, although it is very funny. It's sort of the greatness of the show that things can be both bizarre and complex and feel real to the characters and be played in that entire range.
You got so excited reading that.
Because you think
you are the master of this stuff. And then somebody operating at that level of insight.
I almost cried because I thought she was, this is so smart. And Julia, who is only the daughter of someone who does this professionally, has unpacked this in the most nuanced and brilliant level. And I just love her so much. I think that was an unimpeachably perfect breakdown, free of judgment, full of compassion, of exactly what goes on with Roman.
That's amazing.
And Julia, whoever you are, every person in your life who gets to be around you is lucky.
Okay, this comes from Philippa Bolton Hadfield.
You will henceforth be named Sad Sack Wasp Trap.
I'd like to make a case for the sensitive lost boy that is Roman. In your last episode, the terrific Deborah Francis White stated that Roman has no moral fibre. I don't believe this to be true. I think the opposite. We see elements of sensitivity and thoughtfulness in his character throughout, the gift to Kendall, the speech to Shiv and Kendall on the boat about sticking together, his inability to make a decision because he's scared of making the wrong decision. There's a sensitivity that he buries under, he hides it under cynicism. And that's because I think probably he's so sensitive, he has to get in front of it.
This is the thing too, is that we do see just this like flicker of a sweetie to him and a flicker of a sweetie to Kendall. When he was at his lowest.
Yeah.
But we never see the sweetie and Shiv.
No, that's true.
Separate conversation, but
that
keep going.
That is true. She says on a separate note, the wardrobe team fucked up with the fancy lawyer's outfit.
Oh.
This is Lisa she's talking about, in my opinion. The two-piece pinstripe and dodgy necklace feels more dress for the job you want, stroke I'm a boss babe, early 2000s vibe. I'm not buying it.
I am going to now have to revisit Lisa's outfit in episode one to see if I agree. But I love, if nothing else, the language dress for the job you want vibes is brilliant. So I'm just kind of going to give it to her on how smart a description that is.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, this comes from Lisa Davis, who says, sidebar on Greg and
Ewan. Okay, Lisa Davis, We will henceforth be referring to you as fucking amateur hour at the fucking circus. Proceed.
Just 2 points. Point number one, James Cromwell said, that'll do, Babe style. I loved that. Now, that is what, I guess it is his most famous role. He was in the film Babe. Was he the farmer?
Oh, yeah. I've never seen the film Babe.
So I saw it once on VHS in a bed and breakfast in Santa Barbara, circa 2000. Don't give me a look because it was
before
I knew
you. Sorry, Jeff is describing like a lover's holiday that he took with his ex. Gross.
You're constantly talking about your...
All the dicks that I've taken.
Exactly.
But none of them meant anything to me before there was you.
So, and I really liked it, but I've never rewatched it, so I don't know Babe that well. I did read an interview with James Cromwell talking about how that character of Ewan was... He was supposed to be embittered because Logan had screwed him over financially, and that was the character, really. And he got talking to Jesse Armstrong, and he thought, what about having him ideologically opposed to Logan?
So
and Jesse Armstrong thought, that's great. I think it's so interesting that a creator, a writer, would be so open to an actor's suggestion in a character development.
This illustrates one of my core beliefs about humanity, darling. Do you want to know what it is?
Mm.
A lack of defensiveness leads to great art.
Did you learn that whilst doing your drama degree? Is that what they said to you?
No.
Oh, it sounded like a platitude. Sorry.
Oh, no. That's just the thing I came up with. Because I think that when people are like what we will talk about when we're bitching privately about work that we think is poor, a bad podcast, a bad bit of stand-up, a bad radio show, all these things, something will come back to the idea of like, but they can't be told. Like, their ego is so big, they can't be told. And an inability to be told lessens the quality of your art because other people will still have good ideas. But Jesse Armstrong, he can take it.
Yeah. But a singularity of vision can be important as well.
He obviously knows how to walk that line.
Just back to this. Point number two. I wonder if Ewan alluded to his impending death by mentioning getting his affairs in order and working with his lawyer on his estate. Greg seemed oblivious, of course, but I wonder if the egg is about to become a main course rather than dessert sprinkles by inheriting Ewan's shares and place on the board, or it could be a red herring.
Oh, these are very good.
I know.
It's almost upsetting me in a way, just because I'm struggling to... I want to say something insightful about all of it, but I'm just sat here going... That's really, really good.
This is the thing. We don't have to do any heavy lifting here because the email is so good. And the sign off here. Anyway, if it is to be said, so be it. Which is Greg at the hearings.
Oh, phenomenal. All right. Well, fucking amateur hour at the fucking circus. I love it. And I think it could be right. Our next email comes from Charlotte Castle. Charlotte, you will henceforth be referred to as the old beaten dog. Someone has to mention the poster. Now, what she's talking about is the fact that we see this Three Penny Opera poster prominently displayed in Greg's apartment. She writes, someone has to mention that poster. Such a brilliant little detail when Greg talks to the predatory lawyer at the door. Fuck off. Oh, she's requested her own nickname. She wants to be referred to as Unbalanced Love Portfolio. I don't know much about Three Penny Opera other than that Brecht wrote it. So I don't understand why it's what it's saying.
No, but I just want to point out that we were on the settee, on the sofa here, and Sarah said, oh, that's got to be significant. So you noticed it. We just didn't get round to it in the podcast.
Explain it to me because you know more about that play clearly than I do other than that Brecht wrote it.
This is another one which asks us to look a bit more closely at something. This is from Ishbel McLaughlin.
Bendy Fuck.
Bendy Fuck says, dear Fiery Sea and Normie Sea, I'm surprised there isn't more discourse about the power struggle between Carolina and Hugo.
Yes,
because it's there.
Bendy
why,
fuck.
Why haven't we talked
why
about this?
Haven't Bendy, we
what
talked
is
about
wrong
it?
With us?
Oh, Bendy Fuck.
From his entrance onto the stage in season two as the PR for Parks and Cruises, Hugo has been sharpening his elbows to bump Carolina off her pedestal as head of PR for the company. Hugo sticks to Logan like glue, even saying that Carolina should be fired in episode 10 of the last series, whereas Carolina is either mostly off camera or in the phone or being yelled at in person in every episode. The writers make a point to show Hugo's rising influence with Logan and Carolina's slow alienation from the pack. I reckon this bubbling feud will prove to be a big fucking deal for the direction of the series.
Oh.
If Carolina gets pushed out, she knows where the bodies are buried and she could be the final nail in Logan's coffin. Logan is so focused on his kids, he isn't seeing the chess games going on around him, and it might prove to be his downfall. Ishbel says, if I could have the nickname of Mole Woman, I would be very grateful.
Oh my gosh, I need to...
So you need to retract Bendy Fuck.
I'm retracting Bendy Fuck and we're going Mole Woman.
Isn't that great? Because as soon as you say it, yes, we've seen that. And also, Logan sort of detests Hugo and
yes.
says as much.
Yes.
He says, like, you're a slimy fucker, whatever he says about him.
But it also, it nonetheless feels like a good coupling. I don't feel that Carolina is meaty enough of a character to shoulder the plot focusing on her that much.
I think you're right. I don't think it's a show where somebody we've seen in the background
will suddenly
pull down the whole house of cards, unless she's brought into the foreground as this series goes on, when somebody realizes, presumably somebody in Kendall's camp, but it maybe it's Ewan and his lawyer, maybe it's Sandy,
maybe.
I think you absolutely, though, Mole Woman, have intuited that that is going to continue to play out. That is going somewhere. I don't think it's going somewhere quite as big as you're suggesting.
Yes, that's what it is.
But it's going somewhere.
Yes, and I feel then so excited about that because that exchange between the two of them when they were dealing with Marcia in the previous episode was so divine.
Yes.
I used the word divine last week as well, so I'm going to cut that out of my
I like it. It reminds me of my late mother.
Oh, well,
she'd always say, I'm going to run myself a divine bath.
This next message comes from Annie Ferguson, the old beaten dog. Just wondered if you had seen this breakdown of the music from the show. I've watched it multiple times and hope he breaks down this season too.
And we've watched this, actually. We watched this a while ago, and it's fascinating.
You have a real mind for this stuff and you love obsessing over it, whereas I would never notice... Oh, this season was less scored, and this one, that's just, that all goes over my head.
Let me say, I'm really impressed that so far on the podcast, you haven't started whinging on the podcast about the music we use on the podcast.
Oh, I always think to myself, oh my God, we need to start letting our listeners know that we know how terrible our music is.
Don't say it's terrible, because a man made that for us.
No. It's what we have to do, right, is we're not allowed to use the Succession music.
You can't use real music on podcasts, so you have to get
special.
So
we need something with a Succession flavor. And can I say instead that the guy who did it did a wonderful job, but he's also not Nicholas Britell? Can we say that?
And he was just a man on an app.
Oh, okay, so I'm not worried then. It's not like someone's going to come for us and say that we've hurt their feelings.
No.
That's what I don't want.
No, but I think he's done a good job given the resource and brief.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that I set myself up as not being interested in that sort of stuff and then I heard our music. I'm not like bothered by it. I was just like, oh shit, poor man. That phrase, poor man so-and-so, is so gross and weird.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it doesn't pop into your head now and again.
Because Logan Roy wouldn't be commissioning that music, would he?
No, Logan would get some different music.
Maybe he wouldn't, actually. Maybe Connor would on his Napoleonic History podcast.
Oh, still not.
Maybe Connor would buy the rights to Waterloo and have My at Waterloo, Napoleon Did Surrender. So Vincent Van Pelt also sent a link.
What a regal name. Mm. Let's make him the Grand Old Duke of Dork.
Love it. Love
Grand Old Duke of Dork. Continue.
He says, "Hi, Sarah and Jeff. A few weeks ago, I was introducing my partner to an old movie that I enjoy, The Game, starring Michael Douglas."
Oh, yes. I think we saw that at the Hampstead Everyman.
Well, it's from 1997, so I would be
apparently
surprised.
I'm incorrect with what I just said.
He says, "I was stunned to see how closely the opening credits to our favourite TV series mirror the credits of this 1997 movie. I then found this on the internet," and he links to an article which puts the two side by side, not in a plagiarism way, but just saying, oh, look at the influence
of this.
And it does have a real Succession feel to it. So thank you for...
Well, does he recommend it to us?
Well, I guess if he was foisting it on his partner, he must like it.
Okay, let us know.
I mean, I've tried that before now, and it sometimes doesn't go well.
Also, well, I mean... Do you ever have this thing where, like, your partner wants you to do something and the weight of their expectation that you enjoy a thing is so overwhelming that you feel yourself crushing under the pressure of their expectation? So Jeff brought that to showing me the film Billy Liar, and he got so offended that I sort of, it wasn't clicking with it, that he was genuinely in a shitty mood. For days.
I thought it would also be interesting to hear from anybody who has done the exact same thing with Succession to maybe a partner or a housemate or a family member. I wonder if your enthusiasm for it has killed it for anybody else.
That would be great.
Right, we should stop because we're going to take up too much of people's time otherwise. If we didn't get to your email this week, sorry.
Please know that you are loved and you are read and we are grateful, and please keep coming to us with your contributions.
And we will just rattle through some more crushes before we go.
Oh, great.
Anonymous says, "Just need you to know, I think Greg is a dreamboat. I certainly would. Love his character. Complete crush over here."
Oh, I need to. Thing I'm working on for this podcast, and like, as I need to tone down some of my responses. Yeah, cool.
But you're a very reactive person.
I know, but
if you bump into somebody in the street, even if you see them quite often in other streets, you act as if you've gone hiking in the Himalayas and
seen
bumped
my neighbor.
Into some. Yeah, yeah. And just some here from Joanne.
"We are going to refer to you, Joanne, as fucking Whirlybird."
Fucking Whirlybird says, "Succession weird crushes. Here's mine. It's niche. I have a bit of a thing for Logan Roy. I am appalled at myself for allowing it to develop unchecked. Yes, he's a monster. Yes, he's a tyrant. But he's incredibly charismatic, has twinkly eyes, and I imagine he smells divine." There's that word again. "A very, very expensive cologne. A megalomaniac in lovely cardigans rings my bell.
Oh.
The heart wants what the heart wants." Others on the weird crush list. Jamie Laird. He's the sort of wheeler dealer that goes with Roman and Carl to the Middle East. He looks like he should be a lawyer for the mob, but he's kind of trying to facilitate them going private.
I like that.
And she finishes by saying, "Roman is my regular crush."
Hot AF.
Well, there's lots to get your teeth into, and there's going to be another episode in a couple of days. We do this on a Friday to tide you over the weekend. I'm sure you'll have lots of thoughts to share with us, theories, queries, off the back of that, and off the back of this, and off the back of the conversation we had with Deborah Francis White.
Just brain dump on us, right?
Yeah, we're here for you to brain dump on us.
We want to be your place to dump upon. Email address, how could you forget it? fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com. I've been firecrotchy.
I've been normcrotchy.
You should be normcrotch, despite all that weird shit you like having under your balls. On Monday.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.